When Joseph McNeil sat down at a Woolworths counter in 1960, he just wanted to order some coffee and pie. A simple thing, but a simple thing denied to African Americans in the age of segregation to remind them that they were less than. Thanks to him and the other men of the Greensboro Four, things started to change as people staged sit-ins at lunch counters all across the South, exposing themselves to savage abuse and violence. But they stayed still and they stayed strong, and segregation began to crack. Some people say food shouldn't be political, but politics are all about power. So how can something as powerful as food not be political? A few months ago, Dan Pashman and I got in touch. He's the host of a great podcast called The Sporkful, and he wanted to talk to me about an essay I'd written a few years ago, asking why certain chefs can become famous cooking the food from other people's cultures. He was planning a series of shows he called Other People's Food, looking at the complicated issues around food and culture and who owns what. And one thing he looked into was the story of the Greensboro Four. New York Times columnist Melissa Clark sat down with Dan to talk about it.
Dan, welcome.
Thanks, Melissa.
So you've been working on a podcast called Other People's Food, where you talk about the relationship between race and food. And I'd love you to tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it was sort of inspired by a lot of what we've seen of recent events, some of the recent violence. Race and culture certainly have been big issues as of late, but it seems like whenever anyone tries to have a conversation about it, it quickly devolves into sort of shouting and one side against another side. And we thought, maybe if we begin the conversation with food, you know, something so universal, maybe we could get it to a different place where it wasn't all shouting.
So recently you spoke to Joseph McNeil. Tell us who he is and why he's important.
Joseph McNeil is a great civil rights leader. He's one of the original members of the Greensboro Four, who were a group of four African-American college students back in 1960 in Greensboro, North Carolina, who staged a sit-in at a segregated lunch counter. At a Woolworth lunch counter, and their protest sparked a bunch of other protests at restaurants and lunch counters across the South and across the U.S. that helped to integrate a lot of restaurants in America. And so he had a huge impact, and I was very fortunate to get to sit down with him. We went out to lunch at a diner on Long Island, and we started off with him just telling me a little bit about some of the events in his life that led up to his protest.
It came to a head at a Richmond bus station. I ordered a hamburger and was told I had to go to the rear of the bus station. And that ticked me off. And then I realized how deep this thing was and that it was going to stay like this unless we changed it. So I went back to the dormitory that evening, confronted my friends and said, listen, we've talked and talked and talked. When are we going to act?
Like, it's such a simple thing, sitting down to eat. You know, like you and I just both walked into this diner and we sat down together to eat.
60 years ago, we tried this maneuver. Right. We'd be confronted.
Which isn't that long ago.
In the scheme of things and lifespans, you're right on.
Right. It's so hard for me to wrap my brain around the idea that what you and I are doing right now would have been a cause for controversy.
Segregation was pervasive. It was everywhere. Even in a McDonald's, you were required to go to the rear of a McDonald's and place your order. And of course, we all know the absurdity of colored water, colored access to the beach, no access to hotels if you're traveling and you're tired.
And so that moment, you walk into the Woolworths on that day, February 1st, 1960, and you go and you sit down on this stool at the counter where no African American, as far as we know, had ever sat at that counter. And you take that seat, and what was going through your head in that moment where you first sat down?
There's lots of uncertainty. How was the crowd of people who gathered around us going to react? How was the store manager going to react? But we faced at that time the possibility of arrest. We were aware of people who defied segregation. We were aware of what happened to Emmett Till. So all these things were operating in the background because it could have happened to us.
I know there was one moment several hours into that first day sitting there where a cop came in and he started sort of brandishing his club.
Yes.
He was walking back and forth. You guys are sitting at the counter in a row of four of you, and he's sort of, sounds like he was sort of pacing back and forth behind you, tapping his club into his hand.
Threatening, menacing.
Right.
Other patrons started to gather around saying, "You see those four colored boys over there?" And the word started to spread that four colored boys were sitting down at a Woolworth store saying they're not going to leave until they're served. There was an elderly white woman. She was watching the scene from the time we sat down. And she got up and started walking towards us. And Frank McCain says, "McNeil, here comes trouble."
Frank McCain, one of the other four of you.
Yes. And we sat there, and the woman came behind McCain and I. She put her hand on his shoulder and on my shoulder and said words like, "Boys, I'm disappointed in you." And then McCain says, "Ma'am, why would you be disappointed in me? You don't know me." And that woman said, "I'm disappointed at what you're doing because it's taken you so long." And that was like a shot of adrenaline. She, in a sense, was our first outside friend.
So, Dan, what happened next?
Well, the protesters did gain more friends, black and white friends, but they also gained a lot of enemies. And very quickly, people sort of descended on this lunch counter. Within a couple of days, a lot of white townspeople who opposed the protesters were getting there earlier to take all the stools at the lunch counter so that the African-American students and the other protesters could not sit there. They could not wage their protest. And so this went on for days with a mixture of protesters and counter-protesters kind of jockeying for the stools. And if you see photos of the time, I mean, it was jam-packed in there. People who couldn't get stools were standing shoulder to shoulder. And it was just so tense in there, almost as if these people were all just kind of waiting for someone to throw a punch.
Right.
And one of the stories that came out of this that I found especially moving was there was a group of white women at an all-girls college down the road who were inspired by the protesters. They came down to the lunch counter. And when they walked up to the counter, several of the white men who were sitting in stools who were opposed to the African-American protesters gave up their seats for these women because they assumed, oh, well, they must be on our side and we're going to be very gentlemanly and give up our seats. So the women sit down in the seats. The waitress comes over and says, "Can I take your order?" And the women say, "Well, we're not ordering yet. We think there's some African-American customers who were here before us."
Wow. That was brave back then.
Yeah, very brave. And at the end of the day, they had a moment where they were afraid that they might have gotten in too deep because this place, again, is packed shoulder to shoulder. And they started to wonder, how are we going to get out of here safely? But without them having to say a word, all of a sudden, at closing time, a group of the African-American protesters surrounded them, locked arms, and escorted them safely out of the restaurant where they had a cab waiting for them, put them in the cab, and sent them back to their all-girls school campus.
That's an amazing story. So, Dan, after that, how long did it take Woolworths to finally integrate their lunch counters?
Well, that initial protest was in February. The lunch counter was integrated in July. So it took months of on and off protests and frankly, a lot of bad publicity for the lunch counter to finally be integrated. But it led to a wave of integrations at restaurants and lunch counters across the country.
Dan, thank you so much for sharing this with us.
My pleasure. Thanks, Melissa.
Dan Pashman is the host of The Sporkful from WMIC Studios. Melissa Clark is a columnist at The New York Times. The Sporkful special series, Other People's Food, is available, just like The Splendid Table, wherever you get your podcasts.